Hello, friends, and welcome to Healing the Divide. On this podcast, if you're new to the channel, we take time each week to explore how we can bring greater nuance and substance to conversations around healing, and in specificity, bringing those tools that we can source from our healing journey into spheres of impact where they are really deeply needed, but often sorely absent. And one of those spaces, the spaces we'll explore today, is in the realm of politics. Specifically, we are joined by our two guests, Travis Suit and Ronnie Kroll, to explore the candidacy of RFK Jr. And in a broader sense, if we look at the larger political zeitgeist, the legitimacy and possibility of getting beyond the duopoly of the two-party system and exploring the third party possibility, or just an independent candidacy, and how to actually maybe heal a divide, not only in the sense of right versus left, but establishment control over the political process, and how we can really explore the divide in ideological thinking, and how that can really sever our ability to think critically and with sovereignty about these issues. So I'm looking forward to a conversation to get into all of these spaces, whether there's agreement, disagreement, wherever that lands. Our agreement amongst each other is to communicate with civility for validation. And while both my guests share a favorability of RFK's candidacy, our hope is to really look at some of the, not just the pros, but the cons that people have brought up, and be able to speak to them in a way that isn't just a talking point for 20 seconds on an establishment media channel, but to unpack the truth behind the narratives and take a closer look at this campaign. So that said, thank you both for being here, and I would love to share a short introduction for each of our guests. So first and foremost, I am going to read a brief introduction for Travis Suit. Travis is a social impact entrepreneur, multimedia producer, keynote speaker, leadership and empowerment coach, yoga and Qigong practitioner, and passionate advocate for the cystic fibrosis community. Travis has founded multiple companies and lifestyle brands and is currently the founder and CEO of Piper's Angels Foundation, a grassroots nonprofit focused on providing socially innovative solutions for the cystic fibrosis community. Over the last decade, to thousands of people on the topics of leadership, entrepreneurship, and empowerment. A student of life, Travis relentlessly pursues and embodies self-transformation as a way of being and shares that with everyone he meets. He emphasizes the power of showing up for ourselves and others, and points to the reservoir of courage, wisdom, and humor that is self-revealing in the adversity of our everyday lives. Travis blends a bold and adventurous personality with a grounded presence that honors the beauty in our divine nature and celebrates the precious gift of life. Travis was recently named Hometown Hero in 2020 by CBS News and is a mentor for the Watson Institute of Social Entrepreneurship at Lynn University. Travis, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Ronnie, and take a moment to introduce you as well. Ronnie Kroll is a model, actor, and entrepreneur with a deep love for political science. You may remember him from Bravo's Make Me a Supermodel, the pages of Playgirl magazine, and or from his work in the community, preventing and healing the effects of bullying with Friend Movement. He's an independent mind with a big heart that loves to have meaningful dialogue with others towards revealing truth and creating solutions. Ronnie, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having us. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. All right, guys. So let's dive in. I've invited you both to be here because I have respect for the work that you advocate, how you show up in life, but not just the what piece of it, but I really want to hone in on the how piece of it, that there is a palpable sense of heart consciousness that I feel infused into the authenticity with which you express yourselves. There's a way in which you each have an ability to stand for something in a strong way of advocacy that doesn't generate conflict. And I'm hoping that those qualities, my secret wish of inviting you both here today, is that those qualities will likewise infuse themselves into this podcast. And as we're in an election season where I'm really perceiving from my subjective lens a potential inflection point in not just this particular election, but in the broader vision of how we approach presidential politics, that this can influence a tidal shift in how this unfolds. So I'm hoping that this conversation can in some way contribute something meaningful to that. So that said, my first question, and I'd like to offer you each an opportunity to answer this, is going back, if we could rewind and then we could widen the lens and take in the pre-existent environment and conditions of politics within the United States over the last 4 or 5 years, maybe even longer if you want to extend that. And then we could see how RFK as a candidate is arising and emerging from within this broader cultural condition. If you could speak to the way you see that condition first and foremost, and what role you see RFK playing inside that broader context. So that said, let's start with Travis. Take a moment to share anything that's on your heart and we'll kick it off.
Yeah, thank you. Considering I do not have a very deep political science background, and Ronnie might have a broader and deeper scope of appreciation for that specific question. So, you know, for me, looking back at my life, I'm 40 years old and, you know, growing up Republican household with very, very deep kind of Republican cultural anchors and values and things. And it always just seemed like a tennis match. It's like in the political, you know, game, it was like, okay, it's going back and it's going forth. It's going back and it's going forth. And I always just felt like this observer, like watching it go back and forth and not really feeling like I was a part of that game, but that it was just some bigger, broader game being played. And, you know, as I grew into, you know, my own maturity and greater awareness, I mean, I still feel ignorant to many of the topics and processes that are being juggled by the whole political game. And so I just always felt disenfranchised from it in a big way, you know, and I was one of those people who didn't vote because it was like, what's the point? I don't understand. This is a joke. And so, you know, as I've become a parent, I think that fundamentally has been the primary driver for my deeper investigation into the truth of what our political system is doing and bringing as leadership, and my personal role in advocacy, both with my family and on a professional level, has given me a greater appreciation for having a voice and giving people a voice and understanding why it's so important to empower the voice that people have and the value of that. And so, you know, as this has unfolded over the last, you know, few presidential cycles, a couple things stand out to me, which, you know, on some levels are exciting because I've always kind of been neutral, which is like, it seems like with Obama and President Trump, molds were broken, right? There was like these, there were specific molds that had been in place and those were stretched or broken and redefined. And it seems like our world is accelerating through this digital media revolution where information and technology is accelerating what we have access to and what's possible and how fast things can happen. And so, you know, I've feel like we've just arrived to another place where that mold every 4 year cycle, so much changes in 4 years. Look what we've gone through in the last 8 years, right? I mean, the whole world. So I feel like there's these big shifts that can happen. And I feel like we're on the precipice of another one of those shifts in consciousness as a humanity. And as my demographic has grown up and are now becoming parents and business owners and taking a larger place, so to speak, in society and in resources, leadership, that our voice, the voice of so many people who maybe were disenfranchised or felt left out or weren't being heard, is now reaching a new level of engagement because of this digital age. And it's allowing for there to be more of this right here, which is so beautiful. And so it's very exciting. So that's my best best encapsulation of it as possible to answer that question. I hope that was aligned with where the direction of the question was going.
I really, really deeply appreciate your enthusiasm, your articulation, and I think predominantly your advocacy for the politically disenfranchised, and how you yourself as arising out of that sense of it's arbitrary, it's irrelevant, I'm not a participant in this, and that becoming a parent can motivate you to become more engaged civically. And you think about the world that we're leaving to our children or creating with our children and for them, and the choices we make, you know, the degree to which we can influence positive outcome, we feel called to take action. And I think, yes, there's an element here of the digital age giving us possibilities like this. We wouldn't have been communicating this way probably even 5 years ago, you know? So this will, I think, podcasts, specifically long form podcasts, by the time we get to the next election cycle, will take over as the predominant means of media consumption. And I think that's a result not only of its nature, but the younger generations coming up and older generations, they won't be the majority. After a while, there's going to be that natural cycle. And we can already see, if you look at by age group and how they consume news, you can already see those trends. And what I love about that's not an age bias thing. It's about the opportunity to have deeper conversation and challenge talking points. So thank you for presencing that. And I think that's the reason to connect it to RFK, largely how he's been able to galvanize the support that he has. So right on, more to come. Let's go to Ronnie. And yeah, same question.
I have so many thoughts swirling through my head because I'm so excited about this conversation that it's hard to reach out and pick the one that I think is best. But just to piggyback on what you so eloquently said, Travis, specifically over the last 4, 8, even 12 years, what's been going on, I think, with technology increasing as fast as it is we do have this information at our fingertips. So for better or worse, it's always available to us. So the truth has eluded us for so long. And now that we have these computers in our hands, it's much harder to hide the truth. It's eventually going to bubble up and come out. Politically, between the parties, I think over the years, obviously, we're still such a young country. And we've been going back and forth, back and forth. In comparison to, let's say, England, where there's a multi-party system, we have a two-party system, and that comes with its own pros and cons as well. You could say that things might go a little bit faster if one has a majority over the other in a two-party system and they can push things through, whereas in England, they have parliament and you have to like build factions and coalitions and get more of these other parties to come on board to move things through. So a little bit slower, but you can work towards maybe more consensus. And whereas right now, it feels like, especially over the last 4, 8, 12 years, it's been a divide right down the middle. Like half the country hates the other half of the country and our politics. And both parties have been doubling down on the fear-based rhetoric and the partisan rhetoric. Even Biden came in saying that he was going to be the president that was going to unite us and bring us together. And unfortunately, after the last State of the Union address, we see that there's a lot of calling out of Republicans. It was not so much a unity speech. It was very much of like, this is our party, this is our vision, and you kind of got to get on board. The unfortunate part there is that a nation divided cannot win. We cannot thrive together unless we can actually learn how to respect each other and communicate with each other and have these kind of conversations. And I think we have a lot more in common than we do different. It's just that these politicians and the way our system is working or not working right now for the American people is that they know if they double down on the fear, if they double down on the ego, and they double down on kind of like the surface level stuff, that they can motivate their base and get them emotional versus becoming a critical thinker and trying to figure out what's the best solution for the greatest good. It's like, if they get us in a fear place, we're going to do whatever it is that they want us to do. And ultimately, it comes down to money and winning. And so what they do is both parties get us as very emotional about a specific topic, and then they can manipulate us in the direction in which they want us to go. That's everything from the rhetoric of the politicians to the media, whether you're watching Fox, CNN, MSNBC, or the like. They have a very clear agenda. They know who their base is. They know who they're talking to. And there's private interests involved, right? So you got pharmaceutical companies that are sponsoring the broadcasts and things of that nature. You have board members that are not only on the pharmaceutical boards, but they're also on the boards of the media. So again, getting to the truth is so hard. So all of a sudden, enter stage right, Bobby Kennedy, and he's finally saying, I'm here to tell the truth, you know, and we're going to find that truth together. Sorry, there's a siren in the background. Hollywood life. So I'm here and we're going to navigate this together and we're going to find the truth together. And he stepped away from the Democratic Party and he's saying, I want to find that truth with you, whether you identify as a Republican, a Democrat, or somewhere in between. And that's really how the truth works, right? There's my truth, your truth, and then there's the actual truth that's usually somewhere in the middle, but it's kind of murky waters getting there. And I think Bobby Kennedy really is the candidate right now who is speaking in substance. He's speaking to the real challenges of the everyday American. He's in touch with the everyday American is going through. You know, a lot of these politicians have unfortunately been bought. As he says time and time again, our government has been captured, and that's not a Republican thing and it's not a Democratic thing. But as long as we keep identifying with these labels, we're going to keep arguing with each other, and over like this is literally not even ours anymore. So I think Bobby has the ability and the vision to show Americans, even though it's a tough pill to swallow, that we've been lied to. You know, that our representatives, even if they start out with the best of intentions to make a difference in the world, they get bought by the lobbies and the special interests and the wealthy, and they live great lives because of it. You know, they have the best of everything, healthcare, pensions, salaries, being wined and dined. You hear of senators in New Jersey, it was Menendez getting gold bars and his wife getting bought cars and things of that nature. This is not a Republican or Democrat thing. And I think Bobby realizes that. And he's trying to impress on the American people that we've got to walk away from these labels and declare our independence. We have to take back our country for the people.
So well said. Thank you so much, Ronnie. Yeah, you touched on a lot of really powerful points that we'll get to unpack. And in the core of what I heard is really the subject of identity, that when we align our identity to a particular set of beliefs, we are complicit in the subjugation of our own sovereignty. We are now operating in lockstep with the political agenda as expressed and espoused through the media outlet that operates as its megaphone, essentially. And it's funny that we talk about this because I had posted this on my Instagram story. You know, what are your thoughts on RFK's candidacy? I'm going to record this podcast. I'll have to have some audience interaction and participation, etc. And one of the interesting things I got back was somebody said, I brought this up to my dad and he got angry and said, he's a lunatic. And yeah. And that goes right to what you're saying about the idea of getting emotional, getting activated, having that ideology. And then said that he watches CNN and Fox both a lot and does this ping-ponging within his own being, kind of that Travis was speaking to. And I see this in my own family as well. And it's like, well, I'm going to see both sides as if that represents the whole picture. But it's like, hey, that ball that's going back and forth is on the same court.
Right.
And when we see that that's happening, and it's really this underbelly of a uniparty, not to say the Democrats and Republicans are in, you know, hidden agreement, not that they're, and also not to say that there aren't Black Rocks and Vanguards and State Streets and the corporatocracy that has interest in both parties at play, no matter what, because that's true, I believe, as well. But that the idea of choosing between two different forms of propaganda is freedom. It misses the point when we can actually turn off those news. If you know that what you're being served is biased based on a particular political platform that's not representing itself as such, then I believe we have to take responsibility for our own information gathering, and we have to look to other sources at the heart of it. But when the identity is wrapped up in it. I noticed this in lots of conversations. It doesn't matter which, like what almost a politician says, they can change and then their base will go, will do whatever it takes to contort themselves to change with it because the identity is wrapped up in this tribalist thinking. And so it feels like an important goal for this conversation is to present the consideration for each of us to explore the degree to which we have really created an identity around our beliefs, in this case, political beliefs, but really in all spaces, and to invite the possibility that we can have a belief without being a belief. And in that case, it sort of jostles the way that it has constricted us to think according to party lines. And we can kind of lightning bolt down the middle and go, I lean a little bit left on this issue, right on this issue. Or even if we could take away those terms and just have conversations where we can get to deeper understanding, I think that's largely at play as a movement that could occur. And ideally, if that could awaken the disenfranchised, the people that haven't felt motivated to participate in this process. If I look at somebody like RFK and standing for what he stands for, as I have a similar interpretation that you both share, it would seem to me that he's going to need to coalesce some support from people that have felt excluded from the process. And that could be what could legitimize the possibility of an actual victory. So I'd love to hear from each of you your thoughts specifically on this idea of media conveying the, the talking points of the party. So it's like, okay, RFK made his VP choice. Let's now unleash that all together. Or what I see more broadly in terms of the media is the narrative that it's a two-party race. I think RFK got a little bit of news coverage because of the VP selection in Nicole Shanahan. But prior to that, I did a little prep for this podcast. And as of a few days ago, if you looked at the political homepage for CNN, MSNBC, and Fox, you have, we have a total of 16 times that Trump is mentioned, 11 times that Biden is mentioned, and 0 times that RFK is mentioned. That's on CNN. On Fox, you've got 0 mentions for RFK. On MSNBC, you've got 0 mentions for RFK. So that's MSNBC, CNN, and Fox, all 0 mentions. Like, he's not even in the race, yet he has the highest favorability rating at 52%. The lowest unfavorability rating. A new NBC poll shows that 34% of voters could see themselves voting for him. And the latest Quinnipiac poll from February 21st in the general election shows him running at 15% in the general with Trump and Biden there. And that's massive for an independent candidate. So the idea that we could just pretend that he's not there. So I'll give you a few different options to see which one do you want to choose from. A is the non-existent narrative. B is the fringe lunatic narrative. If you want to throw a conspiracy theorist in there, feel free. And then I'll say the C would be the anti-vax. And so feel free to take that any way you want. We'll go back to Travis. But if somebody is sitting here listening to this episode and they said, I can't even vote for this guy because he's a fringe lunatic conspiracy anti-vax with anti-vaxxer with no chance of winning anyway. And he's just going to steal some votes from my candidate and I can't take him seriously. What would you say in response?
Well, you don't have to dig very deep to realize how incredible of a human Bobby Kennedy is. That's what I would say to somebody is that, and what I've said to friends who have reached out to me and said, hey, call me on Monday. I saw that you met Bobby Kennedy. I want to hear your sales pitch. And my response is, he doesn't need a sales pitch. You don't need me to call you on Monday. Go do a little bit of research on your own. 20 minutes. Read about the guy's life. See how much tremendous courage it requires of a man who has lived through what he's lived through, who witnessed his uncle assassinated at 10 years old, who witnessed his father assassinated at 14 years old, who went through a tremendous trauma in his life and battled addiction and came through that and still excelled in life, still served people, still was able to bring himself in a way that he advocated for the best of people in our environment. Just go take a peek, read his story, and tell me if you don't see somebody who really triumphed through adversity. And I think that is, for me, it's the way to penetrate through the media narratives, which are so superficial. And everybody knows that at this point. So it's not like if you're having a conversation with somebody and they present that, it's like the question is, do you really think that these media outlets, their headlines actually represent the depth of what we're actually looking and talking about here? Do you really believe that? Because if you do, which side do you choose then? Which headline do you believe? Because they're all over the place. So it takes, at this point, it takes a little bit of that energy of inspiration that requires somebody to care enough. And that's the real truth of it, is if somebody is challenging the topic, my response is to challenge them. It's like, you know, it's its own inquiry, right? That it's like, you know, in the process of all of this, like, you know, it's like a self-inquiry. Like, you can't take it from the speaker. Don't listen to me. Go find out for yourself. And if you can find out a few things, come back and let's have the conversation. But he doesn't need a sales pitch. And that's how I would respond to somebody in that conversation. You know, obviously, anti-vax is such an easy thing to say, anti-anything, but he's not anti-vax. He wants to have vaccines thoroughly investigated to the same due diligence as any other medication that's out there. And that's not anti-anything. That's actually really taking a stance for protecting our children's future, right? It's like, you know, so I think that we have become, and we are such a topical solution kind of culture that we want the quick fix. We want the, just give it to me in 30 seconds. I just need to know. Just tell me. I just need to know. Give me the headline. Give me the 15 seconds on Instagram. And now I know. But we have to really, you know, in a sense, as you were pointing to, we have to be able to create space between that immediate belief of that headline. We have to divorce ourselves from the known. What is being proposed as what's known. And we have to go discover what it is for ourselves. And I think that is the opportunity that we have. And what I want to just touch on is when I went to Austin to go to these events with Bobby, when I checked into the hotel, the gentleman at the hotel, I have my RFK shirt on, right? I always wear it through the airports because I know that's where people will see it the most. And I've only ever gotten positive commentary. But when I got to the hotel, I check in and the last thing the guy says to me, which was kind of funny because he's in hospitality. So this was like a bit off topic, right? Like, yeah. I'm surprised he went there. But he said, so what do you think his chances are of winning? There was nothing else to the conversation. He just asked that. And I was like, oh, my shirt, right. And I sat there, you know, and I took a breath. And I said, you know, I really don't know, but I do believe he can win. But we have also already won because of what he's inspired in us to go discover more. The win is this right here. This is the win. We're living the win. That what's been inspired in people, what he's opened in people has already created a new evolution, a new frontier of courage is so valuable. And so it's like, okay, I already feel like we won. Now it's just the gravy is actually getting to November and seeing what the next 7 months can do and seeing how transformative and seeing how amazing it can be to show that these media narratives are nothing. They're nothing. They do impact people, obviously. But for some of us, if we show up to the restaurant and what they have on the menu isn't something we're willing to put in our bodies, we're walking away. We're not going to say, oh, okay, I'm going to accept that because that's just what's available. I'm going to go look somewhere else and I'm going to find something that's better. And I feel like that's, you know, part of where we've arrived.
Thank you. Yeah, man. First off, man, I love your passion so much. And thank you for that. And I couldn't agree more. And to go back to what you presenced earlier as a parent, I'm watching this firsthand, you guys. I have a son who is 19 years old. He's a freshman in college. So just going out from the nest and into this realm and to see how knowledgeable, empowered, inspired, and engaged he is because of RFK's candidacy. He's constantly sending me, you know, and this is what they said here. This is what he sent today. He sent me a Tim Scott video. This this is what they said about Nicole Shanahan. Here's why that's not that true. Here's, this is what, you know, this person said about to these projects. Well, here's Trump's donations to Kamala's campaign and Hillary's campaign. And here's the amounts. And he's going to school for investigative journalism and investigative filmmaking. And putting all of this into art. And he's deeply inspired by Charles Eisenstein and Aubrey Marcus and RFK and this broader coalition of consciousness that is emerging on our planet. And this has been a coalescing point where there's somebody in politics that to many of us feels like the non-synthetic version of, you know, the real thing. And I agree with you that it's bigger than November. It is about inspiring a movement, not just of youth, but of consciousness itself, to start to organize itself in new ways and in new places and having new conversations that lead to new outcomes and can inspire a renewed sense of vigor to bring to these places. One of the audience contributions I got was, we need new leadership. We need more youth in leadership. But who would ever want to move into the political sphere when the environment is so incredibly hostile and you're going to subject yourself to relentless attack? It takes a lot of courage to enter in. But when we speak these quiet parts out loud, the things that have been silenced for so long, and that one courageous person stands up and says, hey, that doesn't feel right. I'm going to shop at elsewhere. I'm going to go to that other restaurant. All of a sudden you realize, you know, I forget where I heard it first, but I love this. And it's like, it's not the silent minority. It's a silent majority. And then people go, oh, I'm not going to get canceled. I'm not going to become complicit in my own censorship anymore. There's more of you guys out here. And next thing you know, the movement is moving. And it takes this kind of an effort.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's inspiring to be inspired by your children, you know, and it's really, really beautiful to see that advocacy and that passion exist in a 19-year-old. So that said, Ronnie, what's your take on the, I want to just kind of like, I guess I bring this question up, not even so much as like the sales pitch, but like, hey, this is the stuff that's getting propagated and circulated. I'd love to take the moment to say, well, here's why I think that's not true. And Travis, I think you spoke to that powerfully and beautifully. And Ronnie, I'd love to get your take on the same. And I'm sure you encounter it because you're visible in your advocacy as well.
Well, I'd like to circle back to what you said about having a belief rather than becoming the belief or being the belief, because I thought that was so profound. And it was such a golden nugget in this conversation. If you really think about the conversations that go south, that go wrong, that divide friends, families, coworkers, strangers, it's usually because we hold on to those beliefs so much that they are our identity. And what I've realized over the last 4 to 8 years is that if you even question someone, even in the slightest amount, just out of curiosity, it's taken as a direct attack on who they are rather than just what they believe. And if you dissect that a little further, you start to understand why, because usually those beliefs came from somewhere, and usually those beliefs were instilled upon them or us from a loved one, whether it be a mom, a dad, another family member, a religious leader, a teacher that we really cared for. And so not only are you attacking what I believe, but you're attacking the person that I had a relationship with. And so that initial human knee-jerk response is to put up those walls of defense, and that fear and ego is in the driver's seat. So I think what you said about, and I think this comes down to emotional intelligence and where we're growing as humans, is that we need to rise above the fear and ego or the monkey brain into this emotional intelligence where we're able to have discernment, be able to ask questions, learn how to respond rather than react. And the more that we learn and start using these tools, the better our communication is going to be. And we're really going to be listening to understand, listening towards solutions. So the old system is attack, fear, and ego. But the new system that I think that is being ushered in by these conversations that Bernie Sanders and the like have had over the years, and now Bobby Kennedy are having, is like, we really need to talk with each other. We need to talk to each other from a heart-centered space, from a emotional intelligence-centered space. And that's what helps me gravitate towards Bobby, is because he's just a human being. Like, for whatever reason, reason we want our politicians to be perfect. And if something comes out, it's a scandal and we point fingers and we somehow get off on it. But the truth is, Bobby is so open that he removes the stigma from anything you could point your finger at him for, right? As you brought up, Travis, like, he's overcome so much trauma and tragedy. And I'm actually getting emotional just thinking about what he's been through. And I relate to that, especially when it comes to addiction and what's happening in this country with fentanyl and meth just pouring and ruining our youth's lives and ripping families apart. And these are real issues that are going on. And he's been there. He's overcome substance abuse and he's willing to talk about it. And he's willing to stand up and say, I'm here. You're not alone. And I think that's a wonderful thing to have in a leader. And somehow, some way, because of our media and the way our politics have been, we're championing all the wrong things and all the wrong values. And leadership on both sides of the aisle are saying the pretty things. But I don't know about you guys, but I watch Biden and I watch Trump and I watch Kamala and I watch all these leaders. It's so vapid and so empty and it's so scripted. And when you watch Bobby speak, it's honest, it's raw, it's real. He thinks, he listens, and he really is an emotionally intelligent person because he knows his shadow. And I have a feeling, just being in the company with you gentlemen, that you've done some shadow work of your own. Because in order to shine your light and stand in your light, you have to intimately know your shadows. And you can't separate them from your whole person, because when you start doing that, that's dysfunction. You have to embrace the shadow side of yourself to stand in your light. And I think in order for this nation and all of our individual communities to usher in the light that we all deserve and want and need to move forward and to thrive as a nation that's so beautifully diverse, is just to be honest that we have shadows and it's okay to have shadows and we don't have to be perfect. And he's by no means the perfect candidate, but I believe he's being honest. He's genuine. His heart's in the right place. And he's saying the things that a lot of these other politicians are afraid of saying and or are on payroll not to say.
Yeah. Thank you for leading with your heart and feeling safe enough in this container of this conversation to show your vulnerability and really give voice to the wisdom in your heart. And this is no pun intended, but the heart of the matter itself is that, you know, it's when I was listening to this little clip I saw the other day of James Carville, who's a Democratic strategist, saying like, it's time we do some wet work on RFK and you want to play nice, but you got to start to, you know, and this is the whole dark side of politics, and we're going to dig up this dirt and we're going to attack you. And we won't make you do it because you're the candidate, but on your behalf. And it's like, we're so sick of that. Like, we see through the facade of that. And we've had enough of that. And that when somebody can come up and be open and not say, yeah, I only took a puff, but it was like, yeah, I was addicted and I worked through it. And also, by the way, some of those plant medicines have extreme therapeutic value to heal trauma. And I'm going to get behind that. I'm not going to hide from that. And like that, to really live in the nuance and to be a real human and just be open and say, yeah, I mean, yes, we all have that. And if we are going to heal as a people, it's not even a nation, it's a world. You know, we get into, just like we get into political ideology, it shows up in, I was listening to Vivek speak yesterday, and he was saying, it's like, you know, I'm proud to say it, I'm a nationalist, like, we're Americans. And it's like, and sure, we live in America, and that is a scaled out aspect of our experience, but we are beings and we do share a planet. And while our responsibility in terms of political action might be to be the best version of our nation, it is hard to go to say you're going to the deepest part of yourself and honestly say that the deepest part of me is not we. And so when we recognize our shared interconnectedness, our interdependence, it also runs into two potential things that I wanted to bring to you guys. One potential is looking at something like World Economic Forum, WHO, these things that sort of represent on surface the idealism. And to me, it feels like it's it's the false representation of that something real, that interconnectedness. It's like the saccharine marketing pitch version of it. And so that's how it gets people that have that recognition and value to buy in to the we're all in it together, we're all one, but it's doesn't honor our individual sovereignty. And so it's like the collective over the individual. And that's like a leftist perspective. And then on the more conservative or right-leaning side, it seems like it's like individual, nation, America first. It's that consciousness that separates itself from the underlying unity. So my question is, in a movement that we're seeing within this arising of this energy through RFK, what strikes me as unique is the capacity for the recognition of an interdependence that does not become co-opted by centralization. And that seems to mirror to me the process of, on the individual healing journey of how do I experience myself beyond the egoic structure that you're presencing as part of an interconnected whole and an individual as well. And then how does our politics hold the nuance of being individual but not separate, right? Sovereign but not divided, so that it can represent both of those expressions without falling into the polarized exclusive aspect of one or the other.
Yeah, that's it. That's the big one, right?
I think so. Yeah. So yeah, thoughts on that. I mean, maybe it's just that moment where we're just like, yeah. But it seems to be that until we reach that within our own individuality, the outside's always going to be a reflection and projection of what's inside of us. So that is what allows us to sit across from someone and say, hey, I know you have a different belief and it's okay. And I just did this container. It was 8 weeks of politically diverse people coming together to go issue by issue. And each week we did a different issue, but we started by learning Imago, conflict resolution, dialoguing. If you're not familiar with Imago, it's what a lot of therapists use for couples that are having a hard time communicating with one another. And they'll fault and blame and invalidate and not empathize and talk over. And so I taught them Imago dialogue. And then I would put, we're in Zoom, which are different parts of the country, put them in these dyads, one-to-one rooms where we talk about the issue. So if, let's say, Ronnie's speaking, Travis is listening, he might have a totally different worldview. But you mirror back what you heard, you validate their perspective, and you empathize with what that must feel like. So you let them feel seen, you validate the mental process wrapped around it, and you empathize with your heart from that. And they're like, yeah, there's so much connection. Then it switches to the next person, and you hear them, they have a completely different view, and it trips the system because it's like, wait a second, we should be attacking each other, but we're not. We actually really get along. Next thing you know, all these people are getting along. And they're just completely mesmerized by like, how is it possible that I'm sitting here as a Trump supporter talking to a Biden supporter, and we've been like this, like staked in. And it's like, oh, well, we're both operating from what we think is moral and just. We're just having a different set of information, a different information set coming in, a different data set coming in, and our calculus of it is a little bit different. That doesn't make us evil. And when we remove the ad hominem of the other candidate or the other human, it opens up space to let's start from our shared humanity. And then it's okay for us to disagree. We're like you said, Ronnie, we're not going to have a perfect candidate. And that's because perfect is subjective, right? I mean, I know just by looking at your Instagram, you know, you're in staunch support of the Palestinian movement. And Bobby has a different tack that he's taking towards that than I'm sure you would hope for. I don't want to put words in your mouth. But, you know, and how do you reconcile that? It's because I see something that you don't have to have my verbatim views in order for me to see that this is a candidacy worth supporting. Whereas somebody like what I saw with Dave Smith, whose work I really value, if you saw his podcast with Bobby, he just basically said, listen, because of this issue, I'm cutting it out. And that's, to me, so painful because you could galvanize a tremendous amount of libertarian support for a candidate that could move the needle in a really positive way. But it's almost like you're protesting with your arms crossed and saying, well, because it's not this issue, I can't do it. I think it's going to take some bending of the way we...
Listen, I get so much flack for supporting Bobby Kennedy, especially within the LGBT community. He has said some things over the years that I think were taken out of context or misrepresented in certain situations, specifically with regards to the HIV/AIDS epidemic in the 80s. And there's a lot of people that won't support him just because of something they think he felt back then, you know, and we do that a lot in our society. We look to decades old thoughts. And I have to ask those people, like, are you the same person you were 2 decades ago? You know, and if not, like, how can you hold this person to the very same standard and that's their belief today? I'd be remiss if I didn't say that it's really hard for me to reconcile the fact that Bobby is so staunchly in support of what Israel is doing right now. And the thought did cross my mind, who else is there, you know? And I kept looking and I kept keeping my eyes open and my ears open to see, well, who is that person that I can identify with completely? And it's just not possible. I'm not going to agree on every single issue. And I think that's also one of the dangers of a two-party system, is because, of course, you're going to find Republicans that agree on some Democratic issues, and you're going to find Democrats that agree on some Republican core values. So the fact that you have to label yourself a Republican or a Democrat in today's modern era, even our first president of the United States, George Washington, had a fear, and rightfully so, of what the party system could bring, because rich, wealthy, powerful interests can usurp the party and use it for personal interests, you know? And you needed parties back in the day, you know, because we didn't have supercomputers in our hands telling us about the candidates. You were just going off of what the party was telling you to say that this is a reputable person, you should support them. But these days, I think we do have to go back to what we share in common as Americans and what are our values, and revisit those just in any way that a business revisits its mission statement or recultivates a new business statement. Are we living up to what we say? Are we practicing what we preach? Or are we just saying everybody else has to live this way, do as we say, not do as we do? But when it comes to Kennedy and the bigger picture, I agree with him on most things. And I agree with the core of his being, which is, I think he's very pragmatic. I think he's a thinker. Again, I think he's a listener. He's open-minded. I don't think he's just going to completely cut someone off. He's going to say, let's keep this conversation going. And I think that's what we need in a leader. And, you know, I think his, at first, when I saw his choice for VP, I knew nothing about her, you know, but he's, as I've done more research and I get to know her and what she stands for, she seems to be very similar to him in that she's just a real person. She knows who she is, where she's been, her good, bad, and ugly parts, and she's willing to bring all that to the table. I really think that, you know, maybe you guys can help me figure it out too, because I'm always trying to find new ways to share Bobby with my friends and family in a way that's palatable, to say, hey, just put your reservations or your fears or what you've heard aside and just listen to him. Just one interview, go and watch him speak and what he cares about. And I think, you know, you'll see what I see.
I think that's it's a valuable point, Ronnie, and it's turning off again the news network and saying, good, just go listen to this human being speak and see if you feel that to what you've heard to be true, actually true. And I think when we can connect at the, like you said, the core of the being of another human, and we feel that resonance there, that's so rare in politics, where it's often the facade. And to feel authenticity present is so powerful. And one of the, let's stay on the topic of the VP choice, because you presenced really a couple of things. One is, like, no perfect candidate. So Travis, I want to give you a chance to respond if there's thoughts as related to Israel-Palestine, if there's thoughts on Nicole Shanahan as a VP choice. This podcast for future listeners is being recorded 2 days after that announcement, and being that he chose somebody from outside of the at least popular political framework, where most of us are not aware if Rich Wizen is visible in the broader public eye, though very much I think within the tech communities and maybe California politics to some degree, there's still a sense of, like, who is this person? And of course, the first things that come out are the hit jobs from each side. And I think maybe there's, like, a base insecurity for people to say, I want to be able to, you know, show up at the water cooler, so to speak. And, you know, I just need some information to go by. And I've already, like, given my trust to this particular network. And so I will say what they said. I know I saw Charlie Kirk say this, so I'm going to repeat it. And it's like, well, let me think for myself. And I think that's been something I've heard you guys both really say, is at the end of the day, you know, this is the democratic possibility, invitation, like the courage of being in a democracy is that we get to think for ourselves and vote for ourselves. So we get to align our action with our sovereignty and to our sovereignty as free thinkers. And so to really usurp our own process by giving it away, by outsourcing our perspectives to somebody else is really the fundamental. And so how do I take that back and say, hey, just go listen to an interview and then like you be both of presence, then happy to have a conversation and see how you feel. Maybe that is really the best thing. And it's just, you know, things like this, us having these talks. But Travis, I wanted to hand it off to you, your thoughts, whether it's Israel, Palestine, or Nicole Shanahan. I know, like I said, it's early in that process, but what's your take so far?
Yeah, thank you. Well, man, you guys, you know, you hit on so many really important aspects of this. I've been taking notes and I love that I'm learning. When I'm learning, I'm having fun and I like feeling very inspired from both of you. And, you know, I think offering to people like, you know, how Ronnie was saying, like, well, how do you talk to your friends and family? And how do you open the dialogue and conversation? Or if somebody is initially very resistant, I think that aspect, at least, you know, from my perspective, representing a chronic illness, progressive disease community, rare disease, the best, most penetrating tool that we have is storytelling. And one thing I found very inspiring about Bobby are the stories that come out, that they like flower out of his life experience and his consciousness and the people around him. And they get excited to share his stories, right? It's like, so, and when you're around people that he's around, you know, like a couple things that people could look at, like one thing I would say is go look at who is with him on his campaign. Go look at the people around him, right? My grandfather, I asked him one time, you know, what makes a successful entrepreneur? And he said, build the people on your team, putting the right people around you, right? Like, and if you look at the people around him that are in his corner, that is a major indicator of something. The other thing is, you know, if we can go beyond a headline, let me offer you a story, not a headline. Story is a woman whose son was critically life-threatened and injured by a vaccine. Right? Shows up on his doorstep, goes to his house unannounced, is on his doorstep with a stack of papers this deep. And he comes out and they have a brief conversation. And she says, Bobby, I don't know who else to go to. This is a very smart, intelligent woman. You can find this story. I need you to read these. And he says, I've got an appointment to go sailing. I mean, you know, he goes out sailing for hours, comes back. The woman is still sitting on his porch. And try to put yourself in this position, right? You're like, this is my home. There's a woman sitting here and this is a mom, right? This is a mom with a child who has been severely injured and she's doing everything in her power, right, for her child. And he says, you know, you're not going to leave, are you? And she says, no. And he sits down with her and he starts going through what she was presenting. And when you look at the origin of how he ended up even in that arena of discussion around vaccine injuries, when you look at that story in the depth of humanity and compassion that he had, and that another human was that desperate, and the person that woman chose, it's like, you know, when you're in a relationship and you're like, wow, I'm so glad you chose me, right? Like you chose me, right? You know, Scott, you chose Ronnie and I to be here with you. Like what an honor, right? So there's so much just in that choice. And so the fact that a woman chose him to be the voice to help all of these families and children that were injured, that in itself should speak volumes. And it's like that kind of storytelling is so intrinsic to our nature as humans. It's like it really, I feel like it can penetrate deeper into the psychological structures that create conflict and resistance within us. That, you know, to your point, what you were sharing about the exercise that you presented, which I thought was so interesting because that's really taking action. And I think that's where a lot of people fall short. They hear the ideas and the thoughts and the beliefs, but then there's no action. So it's like you presented this exercise that got people engaged into action with each other. And that action, it transcended the fear and the need for an attachment to authority or conformity. And it let them drop into their hearts in the moment, in the present moment with each other, and it created the scope and capacity for inclusivity. I feel like Bobby does a really good job with that because it's like at his VP speech, right? Who opened it? An indigenous
tribe
and cultures, a collective of indigenous people, right? Who followed, right? The way he is inclusive is one of the core values, I think, in general, that can very quickly help us move past the fear of each other. Is like, okay, well, let's just take an inclusive approach. And I think he does that really well. And, you know, I haven't had a lot of time, as we all probably haven't, to digest Nicole Shanahan. But I did watch the entire thing. And when I woke up the next morning, the thing that hit me the most was, oh my God, how did he find another human being that is as intelligent, brilliant, open-minded, creative, you know, like, and in a lot of respects, more capable. She's got tools that he doesn't have because he comes from the old guard and old generation, right? She is like, I mean, it's incredible when you look at, and I don't know a lot about her, right? Except for from what I researched, but you have a mom. And one thing I think people underestimate are moms. I have learned through my journey with cystic fibrosis and Piper and all these children, when I'm on the phone with a mom who has a sick or suffering and dying child, that is the most powerful force in the universe. And this is a mom who had a child, right? Who has a child and has been through that process. And it takes so much courage. It takes so much for mothers to go through that. And I think, you know, she is speaking to moms. And I think that nurturing feminine aspect of culture that has been suppressed from this very patriarchal, you know, longstanding, you know, dominant frame of mind, I think that is such a beautiful thing to nourish, and that could flower with her being the choice. And then you combine every aspect of her technological savvy, her ability to communicate in an authentic way, her resources, and her kind of natural sense of enthusiasm and curiosity and leadership. And, you know, I think he made a hell of a choice, because he didn't go with what he thought other people thought he should choose. Mm-hmm. And again, that really is an indicator of something.
Yeah, I love that last point so much. I was having this conversation with my son, who I referenced earlier. And, you know, as the choice was made, and we really analyzed it from all these different perspectives, and man, this is not going to broaden the coalition. It's, you're going to lose people. You have somebody like Bobby, who's, you know, independent. He's drawing a lot of independent people. He's elevated consciousness. He's drawing those people in, people that have been disenfranchised, drawing them in. But pulling from the left and pulling from the right is something that he's uniquely done. And maybe that was the way that he showed up during COVID and his vaccine positions and advocacy. Again, I don't want to say he was not, just for any listeners who might hold that belief, ever did he say, I am anti-vax, but I am a proponent of vaccine safety and efficacy and the same regulations and trials that are applied anywhere and that I think any of us would want in our medicine and our vaccines to protect us, to be tested for that. I'm an advocate of that. And I hope that we're all that. That to me feels like a little lazy. I don't want to be divisive, but a little lazy to say, I'm not going to go do that research on my own. So for him to say, to know that he's going to lose some people with this decision, because the, again, superficial glance with Nicole is that she is far left, Soros, all these things, you're going to see it all come out. And they knew that. They weren't blind to that. Yeah. Does she bring resources? Yeah, of course she does. That's not a negative. That's a good thing, to bring resources to a campaign. So then it goes into the tech world. So how cozy, you know, wow, this is somebody that was married to the founder of Google, right? So Sergey Brin. So you have to go, wait a second, like that's not cool. And so you see that this is like this contingency of the right-leaning faction of RFK's base start to get shaved off. And the way from like Trump world speaks to that is, if you've been intrigued by Bobby's campaign, well, this should settle the deal for you. And it's like that's the axe that chops the tree down. And then you see on social media a flurry of like, oh, well, I was thinking about it. Now I'm going to Trump. And so for me, we need to think a little bit more critically right here. We have to say, here's somebody that's intelligent enough to know that that could potentially happen. But number one, just because she was involved in big tech closely, we don't know at this point. I'm still learning, so I'm holding neutrality of, I don't know what her positions are on the responsible development of artificial intelligence. If she had a front row seat to it and sees that it's now been in hands of people that we don't trust, and she knows it well and knows how to navigate that space with skill, but with an aligned awareness that we're speaking to today, then I'm all for that. And I have a very, very hard time believing that someone who has really earned his presidential candidacy stripes on issues like censorship in online spaces, it's literally suing the Biden administration over the entanglement between the state and social media, that somebody who is a supporter of internet privacy rights is going to then choose a running mate that as the exact opposite. That tells me that she has the skill, the connections, the resources, and the know-how to operate in that space, but from an aligned vision. And that gives me a deeper sense of safety. I could see how the first knee-jerk reaction would be like, whoa, big tech. But why would he choose her if that was her stance? That just doesn't make sense. Which then brings me to the final point of the courage. And what I really respect about the choice is, knowing all of that, I can only assume that he didn't go with the marketing pitch choice. Like when, you know, Trump chose Mike Pence, and it's like, whoa, I thought you were going to be anti-establishment. It was, you know, it wasn't so much deep state, it was drain the swamp was the vernacular. And then you fill your cabinet with swamp creatures. Again, not to be divided, but you're saying that you're going to do this, and then you're doing the exact opposite. Was it just a political ploy to energize this aspect of a potential base? Are you really about changing those structures of power for authentic reasons, or is it an ego-based thing or a politically motivated thing around that? Whereas with Bobby, what I see that's different is, I think he just basically chose the running mate that said, I plan on winning this thing, and this is who I want to be my partner in achieving the results that we're aiming for. It's not just about who can broaden the coalition and what the naysayers are going to say. It's like, how do we actually get it done? And I value that so much. And I think you do have to temper it, because you do want to, you have to be strategic and actually achieving that victory. But to be able to make such a bold choice and say, I know that you guys don't know where she is and it's going to come out negative, but this is who I think I can do the job with. I love that. So that's my take on it. Ronnie, what about you? Any further thoughts on Nicole as a choice?
So many thoughts. When I first heard her name, again, I said, I don't really know anything of her in the political realm. So I was, I think, a little disappointed, because I had in my head my fantasy ideas of who that perfect, you know, completion ticket would be, and fantasized about what they could do and all the different people I had in mind. And then he threw this curveball, and I was like, and then I, of course, read all the hit pieces, and I'm like, oh, she's one of those that married all these like rich dudes, and now she's wealthy, and she can inject money into the campaign, and you know, like all these sources are saying, you know, this about her. And I was like, oh, that's too bad. And I was really disappointed. And I said, well, let me take the time to really like watch the entire, you know, introduction of Nicole, and then hear what she has to say from her mouth. And listening to her speech, again, it was like a mirror of Kennedy's values. It was another person who, you know, embraces everything about her, the good, bad, and the ugly. And I think one of the things to make note about Nicole, too, is the age difference. The fact that she is, I believe, a millennial, you know, she's a bit younger than Kennedy. And one of the things that I've seen as a challenge for our country to move forward is, you have boomers that are getting older, and they oftentimes point fingers and attack the younger generations. And then the younger generations don't necessarily respect or value or see the worth of the older generations. And they they have this kind of, they're at odds with each other. And I've always thought that you need both. I think you need youth and innovation, and I think you need maturity and experience. And I think not having both is not paying attention to like the blind spots when you're driving and doing a lane change in a car. You need to have both. So I think in that sense, it's very smart that, you know, I think Kenny's 70 now, right? Or 69. And she's 38. 39?
I believe 38. I could be wrong. But.
Yeah, she's somewhere right in there. So I think that's a wonderful asset. And there was one, I have the speech in front of me here. There was one thing that she said that I think was so important. It says, we can figure out what's making us sick. We just have to ask the right questions, do the right research, and apply the right tools. We have to rid science of the corporate bias that contaminates it today. And then we can put this thing into reverse. And that's important to me, and I think should be important to so many Americans, because, you know, they keep using the rhetoric of following the science, but really we have to be following the money, because money always dictates the science. And I don't think people realize that sometimes when we drink our Kool-Aid from the CNN or the Fox or the MSNBC, we just kind of go with that rip from the headlines, and then they shame you for not following the science. But if you take a deeper look and think critically, and you start to ask yourself, especially when it comes to, say, censorship, especially in the big tech social media space, when people start censoring you or they have fact checkers, I always ask, well, who's the fact checker and on whose payroll is that fact checker working? Because then they're the ones that are arbitrating truth. And how do you have honest dialogue between ourselves and freedom of speech if that starts getting taken away? So I think combined with Kennedy's experience and all the amazing characteristics and attributes that he has, she brings that tech savvy, that a bit, she's like, we've got the data, we just have to know how to ask the right questions and scan the data to find the answers. And I've always thought that politicians that don't seek out help from like analysts or engineers that make things operate and work, you know, they don't necessarily have the bigger picture that they need and all the data that they need to make the right choices. So I guess that's a long-winded way of saying, like, even though when I first found out about his choice, I wasn't excited, I'm getting more and more excited as I learn about Nicole and why he may have made that choice. And it just makes me think he's even that much more of a better leader. You know, the fact that he can make a choice that isn't necessarily the obvious one that other people would want him to make, and that he's done his research, he's dug deeper, and he knows exactly what he wants and needs. And that's also representative of who he's going to pick on his cabinet and surround himself with in those positions moving forward in his administration, you know?
100%. And then to just reinforce that fact-checking piece, if you look into Media Matters, if you look into Center for American Progress, these are politically right or left-leaning, and the way I just shared them, left and then right, that are just going out and saying that they're fact-checkers. It's like Trusted News Initiative. It's like, we went out and said it, we're trustworthy because it's in our name.
Right.
And then when you look at the ownership stake of the news outlets that are in that BBC-led conglomerate, including social media, which includes Meta. So that is, the stakeholders are the same, to go right back where you started, Ronnie. It's like the same companies that are running the pharmaceutical companies and the Raytheons and the Northrop Grumman's and the whole military industrial complex. And so my question for you guys is, if that's what's really at play, it seems to me we could go issue to issue, but it seems like there's one central issue, which is until there is the separation of the merger of the state and corporate powers, when those influences that have become so entangled, the corporatocracy, that's the most fundamental issue in my analysis, because you can address lots of issues, but if you're not changing the power structure that sits beneath the leaders that change with election cycles, if you're not getting into the actual bureaucrats, then it's really hard to change the system that we're in.
That's like what Will and Jada, you know, called it, an entanglement. You know, our corporations are entangled with our government. And it's a fine line that you walk when you want to try to address that, because you don't want to make an enemy out of anybody. You know, these corporations in and of themselves are not the enemy, but unfortunately, they already hold so much power as their corporate entity. And then when they sink their teeth into the representatives that are supposed to be looking after the general welfare of our people and our country, but we're humans, and we all, when presented opportunities to better or enrich our lives, are, you know, forced to make choices. And sometimes that moral compass is not as calibrated, especially when gold bars and cars and fancy trips. You know, you've seen it even within our Supreme Court justices benefiting from, you know, certain wealthy people and corporations, and then to get swayed in that direction. So are you really truly representing the electorate that put you there, or are you paying them lip service and then doing whatever it is the people that are keeping you in power with everything that you enjoy? And again, that's why I bring it back. It's not a Democrat Republican thing. It's just a human thing. And as long as we continue to allow these corporations be married with government, and we don't find ways to divorce them a bit, to level the playing field. But I guess my question to you guys is, and this is something I've thought a lot about, is like, is that answer going to come from the inside? Because why would any person, whether they be Republican or Democrat, want to shoot themselves in the foot and remove the gravy train? You know what I'm saying? Like, to offer up campaign finance reform legitimately and seek it out, even though knowing it's going to take away some of the gravy train and the benefits that you have, offering up the idea of maybe some kind of term limits that allow you to only be in a space or a position for a certain amount of time. And it doesn't mean you don't leave politics, but you have to go serve somewhere else in a different capacity. Until, can that happen from the inside? I don't know.
Yeah, it's wild to leave, we task a legislature with changing laws that are, you know, antithetical to their own best interests, especially when driven by the ego. So campaign finance, term limits, even revolving door, you know, bend the legislation in our favor. And then when you come out, we'll have a sweet, you know, seat on our board for you, and you'll, you know, make all your money then. Or even in the role of the Israel lobby right now, you know, it's like teeth sunk deep into candidates. That's why I think we're not seeing so much speaking out against, because so many of our politicians are bought and paid for. So my question for you, Travis, I'd love to hear this from your perspective. It seems like we have a candidate. Well, first off, let me go back and pick up on that disenfranchised voter piece, because you just flagged that for me, Ronnie. It's like, when if I'm sitting here going like, do I want, you know, the puppet on the right, the puppet on the left kind of thing? And now I would say back to someone that says it doesn't matter anyway if you vote for this guy or that guy, I'd say, like, what if that's true? What if, like, your whole life that has been the true story? And now imagine someone that feels the exact same way as you, actually running for office. And if you don't actually get behind that person when there's a real chance of addressing this very issue, the corruption of our political ecosystem, then we're actually voting for the continuation of the thing that we say we're against. When to me, that's a really, I don't say that in a shaming way. I say that in an empowering way, that you finally have that voice. But then there's the practical side, right? I brought up the thing with Trump, because what he said once he got elected was, well, I can't do it. There's laws against doing this, and you can't just have these mass layoffs. And one of the things I really appreciated about Vivek's primary campaign was he laid out steps on how he would dismantle that practically. And I wonder what, if you guys have thoughts on not just that this is the underlying issue, but this solution, if it can come from, air quotes, within. I don't think it could come from a legislative body, but I think, I don't know that the issue is just the elected officials. I think it's the interests, not only corporate behind it, but the three-letter agencies that carry it all out. So when you look at the FBI, the CEA, the DEA, the CDC, the Department of Education, all of these organizations, Vivek had a plan of essentially what Elon Musk did when he purchased Twitter, which was mass layoffs followed by a vetted rehiring process, because you can't individually fire people, but you can legally, as president, have mass layoffs. And so that's the legal loophole. And then you do that vetted rehiring, get back to that 25% threshold. That seemed at my, maybe it's my nescience that would say it, but it seemed like, hey, that feels like a good plan to me. Travis, what are your thoughts on, like, how do we actually affect the change that we're talking about? Or how might Bobby approach it? And if you have a thought on that.
Well, what do most Americans do when they want to get a problem solved?
Drink.
If they meditate, I don't know, call the therapist. We need a think tank of healing arts practitioners to help solve these issues. But
I always enjoy being playful, no matter, you know, how serious the topic is. But a lot of people go hire an attorney. And if you're going to hire one attorney, why not hire a team of attorneys? And, you know, so when I look at the situation, like in all seriousness, like if you're going to challenge somebody to go in there and rework something from the inside out, why not choose somebody who's already done it multiple times, taken on big, big interests and won? And it's one of the things that's not talked about that is interesting. And it's an indicator, is how many billboards do you see on the side of an interstate that is an attorney saying that they've won $1 billion on behalf of their clients? Because there's something about winning and winning money that really appeals to the American public. It's like the reason the lottery, right? It's like, there's something about winning and winning big, right? And with Bobby, you know, it's not talked about that much, right? Like we're in kind of in the Trump-esque world, winning is, he just posted about winning his golf tournaments, right? Like winning is kind of everything, right? His book that I listened to in college, which got me excited about him one day being a possible candidate for president before he was called Think Big and Kick Ass. And it was like, oh, you know, like, because that's that mentality. And I think if people understand that there is an opportunity to be on a winning team, that the winning team is actually there, then there's a possibility. And I think for all those people sitting on the sidelines, or for all the people who, this is another big one, think that they're going to throw away their vote.
Thank you.
That's the other big one that comes up a lot. Our country is sick. Everybody has been affected by alcoholism, addiction, some form of substance abuse, chronic illness. I mean, it has become our cultural existence that our country is sick. And what's most personal is what's most universal. And again, it's like, that is one of those areas that creates the inclusivity necessary to inspire people to make a decision, to make a choice, to stand up and say, just like I am, to the people who say it's a throwaway vote. And I say that attitude is the reason why it's a throwaway vote, because we don't have enough people who have the courage to actually say, this is going to make a difference and this is going to matter. And so I'm going to put my energy into that possibility, because that's what's happening. That's what I see, is this is a grassroots movement. It is that largely independent block of people who want something different. And as much as it seems like the left and the right are these big gorillas, I really do believe actually the core community within those is actually a very narrow-minded, narrow-limited group. And the rest are out here somewhere. And so that out here somewhere, I think there's a real possibility there for that wave of momentum to carry. And if you're going to rework the system, which it's very interesting that on kind of a philosophical level, that the dismantling of the capture, the dismantling of the conflict, which is happening at a big level, is also mirroring the dismantling of the conflict that we're experiencing in consciousness on an individual level. And so it's as if the rising, right, the mirroring is becoming more clear. And so there's a sense of trust, right? It's like that, you know, acceptance and trust, right, which is carries a pretty high vibration and energy. That sense of trust that this is actually going to happen, it's just going to happen. It's going to happen as a natural result of what's arising in our culture, which is that we are falling apart. We are very, very sick. It's showing up in all the mass shootings, in the violence. It's showing up all around us. And we're all under the same appreciation and realization that there are things that are falling apart. There are things that are wrong and something needs to be done. And if you're going to change that, and I do believe that Bobby has presented many really well thought out ideas, plans of how he will go in and meet with the individual agencies, and he will start to strip away the things that are continuing to guide and contain that lack of integrity, and he will reinvigorate and reinstill a sense of integrity from the top down by shifting that. Right. And I think that the challenge in a sense is like, why was his uncle and his father killed in when they got into power in their leadership? Right. If you look at the trauma of this country and where that came from, and I don't know that much about the historical. I know there's a lot of influences and different theories about that. But at the end of the day, there was a reason that happened. And there's a reason why he is stepping into this role of courage to carry that legacy of integrity, right, in leadership. And I think you've got to, if you're going to win at that game, if you're going to unravel, you got to hire the right team, right? And that's kind of the way, it's like, I try to think about the way people relate to things on a daily basis, right? And it's like, why does that billboard say that? You know, there's a reason. So
it's such a great perspective. And you look at, you know, again, going back to the audience questions that I solicited, one of them said, I appreciate certain things about him, but I don't think he has the bandwidth to take on the job. And I'm thinking what you're thinking, like, hey, like, who's done it before? And someone says, we don't have experience. Well, on the most pressing issue, he has the most experience taking on corporate corruption at the expense of the health of ourselves physically and our environment. To, you know, and it's interesting, you know, talk about stories, you know, the documentary, Travis, that you shared with me, and it talked about like when they wanted to clean up the Hudson River, when he would go there as a kid and you look at how polluted it is. He didn't just like hire people to go clean it up. He went out there with a friend, literally like scooped up the water and started testing its toxicity levels with his own hands and then took down the entire thing. And then started doing it with the pharmaceutical companies and looking into vaccines. And time and time again, you have somebody that has been presented up against what seems like an insurmountable, infested, like toxic, polluted system and has successfully taken it down. That is somebody I would want to put my vote behind. And then to piggyback on this thought of the claim of, well, it's a wasted vote. That was another thing that I heard back from somebody was saying, we need a sure thing. We've got to make sure our votes count. It's too big of a risk to vote for him. And that really kind of like, I kind of stammered internally for a moment because it felt like a coil popped in my brain. And I had to try to follow the logic in that, especially given right now at recording, we're end of March. We're just beginning for this conversation to get, you know, whittled down to three candidates, have a broader conversation about it, move through the democratic process. And right from the beginning, to go ahead and discount someone and say the basis of a functioning democracy is to basically assure that your vote doesn't count by making sure that you don't vote for the candidate that you believe in. Like, wait, what? That's antithetical to the entire process. I think it would make my vote not count to essentially throw it out and be like, this process doesn't matter. It's not going to count. So I think if we push back against that narrative, every one of us listening inside of your heart right now, if you buy into that story that says my vote won't count if I vote for RFK, then you are voting for the continuance of the system that you are hoping to change. And you have somebody that's going to change it. That is what they want you. That is what the other two parties would want you to think so that you don't empower your candidate, which is also saying you don't empower yourself. And it's important for every one of us to be able to look within and say, what any narrative is saying, I'm going to vote my conscience. And then just go listen to each of those people that are there. And if there's one that you feel called towards, go for it. And if it's not, that's the beautiful thing is I advocate for our right to disagree. I don't care if honestly, if you don't vote for RFK and that's who I'd want to, that's awesome. Like, I love that we live in a world where we can have differences of opinions. You know, I love listening to my father tell me why he loves Donald Trump. You know, it's awesome. And I love that we can hang out and have a good meal too. And so I think part of what this is about, and I want to be mindful because it's nuanced. It's easy to say, well, it's just this candidate versus that candidate. It's like, we're actually talking about a candidate that stands for having a diversity and a plurality of viewpoints. And that's okay if you don't want that candidate. But let's agree on our right to disagree civilly. Let's have the conversation a little bit differently. So we're hearing a little bit of advocacy on this podcast. We're hearing a little bit about why I feel passionate about this candidate. That's awesome. You might be listening and feel passionate about a different candidate. That's awesome too. Just had a podcast recently with supporters of each of the primary candidates in one episode. And it was amazing to have that conversation. I wanted to do something a little bit differently today. I want to do something a little bit different with this specific episode, because I feel that there is a unique inflection point in the larger capacity for an independent candidate to have an opportunity to actually win the presidency. And if that happens, the entire thing changes. It's bigger than one person. It's bigger than one election. And we have the ability to participate in that tectonic shift. And it's important that we talk about that, not just about the candidate, but about the broader possibility that is in front of us right now. And that feels incredibly empowering and exciting. And it feels great to be able to have conversations where we're finally questioning the stronghold of that, you know, historical binary right left, which, as I couldn't agree more, that that's a reflection of the consciousness that is this or that, yes or no, black and white. And the whole idea of healing the divide is to question the premise of the bifurcated, fragmented consciousness, and to be able to see that while we might be associated with a particular way of thinking, we might pendulum to its opposite as we let it go, that ultimately there is a migration back to center where we integrate them, and we are at an opportunity where we're each being invited to explore these ideas within us and then how they are represented in the systems that we choose to support and participate in around us. So that's a little bit how I see it. I want to toss it back to Ronnie. And when you look at the broader meaning and potential of what this is all about, you know, if we were to look back 30 years from now, 50 years from now, what would your hope be for this time? You know, if they're reading about even 100 years from now, they're go back in 20, this is what these guys did with, and by guys, I don't mean just men. I mean, this is what this population did with their opportunity to choose.
I'd like to think that looking back 30, 40, 50 years from now, they'd say that we were able to really, again, rise above the primal monkey brain and fear and ego into a space that really looked out for the greater good so that we could all thrive, you know, so that it wasn't coming from a place of lack. You know, as I'm sure, Travis, you brought up earlier, what's going on in like our individual is being mirrored in the macro, the micro and the macro. And once you start understanding when you act from a place of lack and fear and ego, you attract more of that. But that we were able to shift out of that into a higher vibration, that we were able to see potential and possibilities and working together, that we were able to somehow have an ego death, right? An ego death of self, an ego death of all these groupings and this toxic tribalism, to see our common humanity. That when I look into your eyes, regardless of your race, your religion, your sexual orientation, your gender, all these things that we've figured out how to compartmentalize ourselves into, that we've able to embrace that diversity and celebrate it, but we were still able to find that core essence of not only who we are as Americans and what we stand for, but just as a human species, right? You know, they always joke about like, what would really unite the humans, you know, is it going to take an alien invasion, you know, like Independence Day for us to come together and do something? But more than anything, that we successfully made it not about me versus you or us versus them, but we figured out how to make it us versus the problem. And in doing so, we were able to be on the same side, on the same team, looking at a piece of paper with all the problems before us that we had to co-create solutions for, rather than seeing ourselves on opposite sides of the table and making each other the enemy. And that really is the way through. That is the way through. That's these conversations here, being able to have civil conversations, to be able to speak without fear of being ridiculed or without being fear of being hurt or without fear of being ostracized. Like, these are my genuine feelings. And you guys have created a safe space for me to share my thoughts and ideas that aren't necessarily accepted in my family, friend group, or peer group, you know? And it's difficult sometimes when you're rejected. accepted. I think we all just want to be heard, right? We all want to be acknowledged and seen and heard. And when we are able to do that in our interpersonal relationships and then on a greater level within our communities, that's where the solutions are. Because otherwise, we're just a dog chasing our tail. You know, when you brought up earlier too, that the, let's say, the other parties want to make us feel bad about throwing our vote away, so thereby not empowering our candidate and not empowering ourselves, that said a word to me. That was like taking me to church, because I was like, I'm a recovering people pleaser. And it's taking me years to get away from just trying to be performative and make sure that what I said, that people liked me. But, you know, I didn't realize how manipulative that was. It wasn't coming from a place of manipulation, but I felt like in order to have value and worth, I had to say the things that other people wanted to hear. But in truth, the solutions are on the other side of those things that we're afraid to say, to use our voice to say. And it's just, they're going to look back and say, hey, they figured it out. They rose to the challenge of practicing effective communication tools, of respecting one another, and of realizing that they were all on the same team and that everybody could win, you know? And I think that's where we really need to get to a place to, because I'm all for capitalism, and I think that's a wonderful thing. I think being able to be in charge of your own destiny and go after your dreams and create something. But when we are now living in a capitalistic society that is putting profits over people, then we've already lost. We're not a democracy anymore. In the last two or three elections, if Did Not Vote was a candidate, it would have won by a landslide. You know, how can you be a democracy or even a democratic republic if you vote people in and then another group can buy them out and your voice is no longer heard? All we're doing is picking the person that's going to betray us. It doesn't matter what team they're fighting for, you know? So I would hope that in 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 years from now, they'll look back and say, wow, they looked at Everest and they said, we're going to do that. You know, we're going to overcome the challenges. We're not going to make enemies of each other. We're going to find our common ground and we're going to do what's right for everybody. It's not going to be easy. And it wasn't easy, but they did it, you know.
Need to take a moment just to take that in and let it continue to land. Wow, brother. Like, thank you. First off, like, your words are heard. They are felt. I can feel your spirit, your energy, your authenticity, your relatability. I feel like you're giving voice to what is inside of me, and it's coming out in ways and words I wouldn't know how to reach for. And I'm grateful for that. And I want to share with you that while I'm in Florida and you're in California, I feel like this, like this
West Coast to the East Coast. Come on.
And no. It's inspiring. I mean, it's really, I love feeling that and that energy, and I appreciate it. I relate to the people pleasing element. I know the courage it takes to show up and use your voice when rejection and ridicule is waiting around the corner and you do it anyway. And there's a fear of not doing it is greater than the fear of doing it. And so we bring those scared parts along with us and we show up, and it matters and it makes a difference. I want you to know that you utilizing your voice in this way, in this moment you just shared, is powerful, and it is deeply received and acknowledged and landed. And I want you to like hope for you. I like encourage you to like keep going, keep doing it. And like more and more people are going to rally around you. You have a contagiousness in your heart, which is authenticity and sincerity and a lot of wisdom too. So and thank you. Thank you for sharing that. That was really touching. And even the cat
I thank you both from the bottom of my heart, because, you know, there is a lot of fear coming into conversations like this. I have, you said that somehow Travis and I had figured out a way to speak in a way that doesn't have conflict. But I tell you, that's not necessarily true. Like, I've had so many issues where I've been bullied online and there's been conflict. But I think what the three of us are experiencing here today and what we're acknowledging in one another is that it's not an absence of conflict. If anything, it is a courage and a willingness to have that conflict and to be well equipped with the tools in how to navigate that conflict so that you understand what everyone's needs are and what the end goals truly are. You know, nobody wins kind of situation. Again, going back to the fear and ego, but being with you guys here today, I feel reflected in both of your eyes and your spirits, like the things that I've been feeling too. And I think within this campaign with Bobby and everyone he's surrounding himself with, I finally feel like I found a place where I feel seen and where I feel heard and where I see the values mirrored back to me in other people, you know, that they see there's another path, that we can get the machete and go out into nature and we can clear a new path. It doesn't have to be this one that's so trodden and this one that's so trodden. And we don't have to have an enemy to do it. You know, I think that's one of the things that prevents us from finding the solutions is somehow there's always got to be a common enemy. And I think in this case, especially with this campaign, the common enemy is not a person, place, or thing. It's poverty. It's greed. It's fear. It's ego. It's all these intangible things that are kind of looming within all of us, again going back to that shadow self and folding that shadow self back into not only our individual spirit and selves but the greater whole of humanity. And that's exciting to me too. Like Travis said, it's like this is an exciting time. It's a dynamic, exciting time to be alive with so much possibility and potential. And talking with you guys has given me hope and it's given me courage, and I'm going to go back out into my conversations after this one and be that more excited, you know, to keep talking about it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I can feel that. You know, I'm thinking of the statement, like, you can't fake the frequency, like the energy doesn't lie.
Right.
And I can just feel in the current of this conversation, the frequency of truth and inspiration, which for me says it's trustworthy. And I agree, I do feel that in a political candidate for the first time in a long time. And that's exciting too. And I share that value with you. And Travis, I'd love to go to you to carry us home, man. We're going to the last few minutes of this podcast, and I want to extend the same question to you to kind of give us a sense of compass. I always zoom out in order to zoom back in. And one of the ways we can do that is kind of look back upon this day and age as if we were looking back upon it from the ones that we leave for those that hopefully, gratefully receive the efforts of our work, the legacy, the inheritance, not of our material possessions, but of the world we chose to craft when we had the ability for that little bit of time to shape it in some way. What's your hope for us and for our future generations from how do we leave this time?
Yeah. Wow. This has been so much fun to have this conversation in this container like this. And especially, now I know you, Scott, so I know how beautiful and powerful and eloquent you are with your words. So I always have a little bit of almost like expectation or anticipation, like that I'm going to feel that energy, right? But to then be in relationship in this to Ronnie, like somebody who in the dualistic sense, I don't know, you know, and to receive, you know, that communication and to feel like what this is all stirring up is so cool. It's such a cool experience to have, you know? And yeah, you know, I think when we look back, the possibility could be that this could be the line of demarcation where it was clear that conscious leadership emerged on a global level. Because right now, I think it's emerging and we see it in ourselves and in the world around us, but it conscious leadership hasn't yet taken the global stage. And it's interesting to see how, you know, it's like, I always joke that like, I'm some kid from a dirt road in rural Palm Beach County who grew up with like very structured conditioned ways of being that I had to really release and break free from. And now I'm practicing like Kriya yoga and Qigong and like having these kinds of conversations. I'm like, what in the world, man? This consciousness is obviously accelerating at like a pretty rapid rate. And I think it does come back to like the vibration, like the frequency. And again, the trust that like, do we really need to fix this or is it just going to do it anyways? I don't know that we're really all that powerful in this or that it itself, whatever it is this wave and it's beautiful in all its variations and colors and that we are at this time when if you look at it, like I love gardening. It's like, you know, when a gardenia bush starts to flower, there's always that first gardenia, right? And you're like, oh my gosh, right? And you see the buds coming. And then it happens so fast that within like 2 weeks, sometimes less, like within a week, it goes from one bud to the whole plant is covered in this beautiful, beautiful display of its innate beauty. And there it is. It has revealed itself right in front of you. And I just feel like that's what we're in. We're in this revelatory process where nature is revealing what's most beautiful and inherent to our essence. And we're on the cusp of that wave cresting. And I do have a lot of just trust in that process that like, this is an indicator of that. And I think we'll be able to look back and we'll be able to say like, yeah, we began to make healthier decisions for ourselves. And that impacted our community, and that impacted our country, and that impacted our world. And that was the beginning of like when this conversation started, you know, it was like on that podcast, right? It was like, and it keeps happening. And so I think there's this beautiful flowering, and how amazing that after billions of years that we ended up here together to witness each other go through this. And I think it's also playful to ask, did we really come here for it to be super easy? Like, was that really the point? Like, would we really be learning anything if we just were all like, yeah, okay, everybody, we're in this together. You know, it's like, no. I mean, you know, the one thing I've learned from, you know, having a family with that has, you know, a chronic illness and a rare disease is that, and from a community of people who go through that, is that adversity is the starting line for courage. That's like the starting line. And then when you, it's like that person who is like, well, my vote doesn't count. It's a throwaway vote. So I'm not going to step into that new frontier of courage. I'm going to just stay where I've been, right? I do believe that is the defining characteristic of the where the heart's energy, where the consciousness of the heart is existing in that expansion. And that's the new frontier of courage, which is different for everybody. And it's like, that's where they are. And that's where we are. And so it's like, but we know energetically, it's scientific, that vibration and that energy, because of people like Ronnie, and because of people like Scott, and because of people who have courage is an initiation of a higher accessible energy that turns into unconditional love, that turns into compassion, that turns into acceptance and trust. And so it's like, if we can just meet each other there, which is what this is all about, right? Healing the divide. It's like, well, you know, the recognition that the divide is inside of us, you know, so maybe this time we'll look back and say that this was the moment that divide was transcended.
Again, necessary requisite moment to pause and receive for metabolization purposes. Man, thank you, brother. That's just so, so full of life. And that coalescent auspiciousness that I feel from you just comes out with power and alignment and clarity, and it's contagious. There's virality when we align our energy with our essence. And when that happens, there is a particular inevitability, which is what I hear you speak to, that the effect is present within the cause. Are we the ones doing it? Or are we what's being done? That there is a divine intelligence that has a thrust that needed the pressure of the things that we're experiencing potentially as problems in order to create the necessary tension, the contraction, in order for that expansion to pulsate back out so that we can create an external world that is a reflection of the true internal world. And the reality is, I actually don't think there is a divide in the deepest sense. So when I name the podcast Healing the Divide, the reality is I believe that everything is fundamentally whole, complete, worthy, innate. Like, it's already, always, already beneath and behind all the fluctuations where we experience the perceptions of division, fundamentally wedded in exquisite harmony. If there's a divide, it's overcoming the perception that that seeming separation is real. And so from that basis, we can look across and say, like you've both shared it, you look different, you think different, you choose different, you feel different, everything. I love that. I don't want to emerge in a garden with only other gardenias. I want to actually in a plurality of gardenias where we all advocate for the soil to hold us all. And that's really the beauty. And in my understanding of how movements move, even after that first gardenia blooms, it's the second one that comes. And when the first one and the second one create this synergy, it's like, boom. And in that place, the inevitability now has a circuitry to express through. And so we get to ride that wave. We get to be stewards of that energy coming in. It is an honor to show up in service. It is an honor to get to start to step into that conscious leadership you speak of, Travis, and you embody as well, Ronnie. And is that is it. And so for everybody that is listening today, watching this, I think the deepest of all of the things that have been shared, the one thing that if I could leave you with anything and I could look back on this time, I were to answer my own question in this sense, I would say that for the people that are engaged in their own awakening process, to likewise engage in the expression of that awakening in the world of form, that we don't leave the material reality in an attempt to transcend it, but we only transcend the identification solely as it. So we can remember that too is an extension and expression of this totality. And it is an honor to get to participate in it, make your voice be heard, be a leader with that awareness, and people will feel it as present within them. You'll call it forth and it will spread, and it is inevitable. And that is an incredible getting to that we have here. So thank you, Bo. Thank you, Travis. Thank you, Ronnie. For everybody that's listening, thank you so much for tuning in and being part of this conversation. Please feel free to comment on the post when we share bits of this. Let's keep the conversation going. You can comment on the threads. You can please support the show so that we can expand the reach of conversations like this. And most of all, just thank you for the work that each of you listening, viewing, participating in the podcast today. Thank you for the work that you're doing on yourself. It does make a difference. You are making a difference just by healing your own self. It is by extension healing the tapestry of the whole. And it's an honor to be part of that with you. So thank you, and catch you all next time on Healing the Divide.
Thank you.